So I've totally faked you all out. This isn't spotting seals with sonar. It's actually watching my chickens on a webcam. And the one thing I would just like to point out is the problem with this picture is these are two chickens doing what they should do, and at the back there, hiding in the corner that you just can't see, is the ginger one, which is constantly escaping. So I have to have a camera to basically watch them. This is basically like live chicken run in my house. But enough of that. Let's actually start with what we're meant to be doing. So, hello, finally. My name's Ben. I work at the Sea Mammal Research Unit at the University of St. Andrews. And we're trying to see if we can spot these lovely little chaps underwater. So, let's see. First slide. So, yeah, so I'm a research software engineer by background, with a little bit of biology education. As I say, I work at SMRU, and what SMRU tends to do is advises the UK government on seal populations on behalf of the National Environment Research Council. So any kind of government policy around seals, both Scottish and national, tends to have sort of SMRU advice behind it. What we're doing is we're looking at the effects of underwater turbines, specifically the group that I'm in, on marine mammals in general. But the bit I'm looking at specifically are seals, for reasons which we'll mention. And I'm a long-time EMF enjoyer. I spent a lot of time in a green high-vis, and I don't want to see any more Harris fencing. So, this is the kind of thing that we're looking at. This is a one kind of turbine. As the tide goes in, it spins the blades one way. When the tide goes the other way, the nacelle spins and the blades keep on going. It's got this sort of tripod structure with three solid concrete blocks, and this is sunk down to the bottom of the ocean with great cost. There are other versions of sort of tidal turbines. Sometimes you get a boat that floats, obviously on the surface, but it's got the turbines mounted in the keel. They're not the ones we're looking at least not yet. We'll come to that. So this is the kind of setup. Now, we're kind of interested in how all marine life is responding to this sort of form of renewable energy. And the other members of my group who are, quote-unquote, the real scientists, I guess, but, you know, they're the marine biologists who look at all this data. And they're concerned because, at the moment, seal population is going down. So this is something that we really need to figure out. Is this one of those effects? You know, is this contributing to seal decline? Now, done a lot of other members of my group have looked at, say, harbour porpoises and harbour seals. The thing about porpoises and dolphins and whales and other creatures similar is they make a lot of noise. So you can listen to them on a hydrophone, okay? Basically an underwater microphone. And you can do lots of quite involved mathematics if you've got enough hydrophones to actually pinpoint them in 3D space. But seals don't make much noise, if any, underwater. So we need another way of trying to spot them. So before I joined to do the sort of software side of things, this had already been sunk in the ocean, and it's called the HICUP, the High Current Underwater Platform, because academics, I guess, love an acronym. It's got in the center here two sonar power supplies, some hydrophones on there as well. One of those sonar is looking along the seafloor, and one is slightly angled upwards so that we can effectively cover the entirety of the turbine. So the sonar looks like this. This is a Tritech Gemini. It's got a 120-degree field of vision with 512 individual beams. So it's approximately 8 frames a second, but because of the way these were interleaved, it's about 4 frames a second that we're getting. You get an image of about 512 pixels by 1600, depending on the range setting. We're looking at about 55 meters. This rectangle then needs to be transformed, so you can do like a polar transform effectively. I wrote something in Vulkan to do that because it's nice and quick. It has a custom file format, but we've written sort of code to sort of deal with that. And I think they're about 17 grand each, something like that. Quite expensive. This is the kind of image that you're going to get. This is slightly downscaled for the video. Can anyone actually see where the moving target is? Anybody? Shout it out if you can. No? I'll give you a clue. It's just gone past down here. It started in the top left and moved all the way down. I know it's hard to see in here because you're not, you know, it's clearer on a monitor, but it's really quite difficult because what you're looking at here is the lower sonar, and it's beaming out across the seafloor, and you can make out the two of the main structures of the turbine, and in the center you can sort of see the nacelle. We get more detail sort of lower down. As the beams spread out, of course, you're getting distortion at the edges. So let's not see that again. Next slide. So how do we deal with that data at the moment? So this is an internal program that it's called PanGuard, and it's got a plugin that looks for intensity changes. And when it finds one, it gives a minimum and maximum distance and a minimum maximum bearing, which makes a little box. And then it tries to track that a little bit for these intensity changes. And if it thinks it's grouped together, it'll give it a color. And then someone can click on that track and go, that's rubbish, that's rubbish, that's a seal, and give it a confidence value. But as you can see on this, you're getting an awful lot of noise in the center. There's a very big distortion curve, sort of distortion here that's been picked up, a high level of intensity. But in the top image, well, and the bottom image as well, is this sort of pink track, which might be genuine. So there's from this alone, there's a lot of noise being picked up. You've got debris, you've got sand and material being washed up from the sea, particularly when the tide changes. You've got bubbles, you've got diving seabirds that look like bubbles. About, depending on which month we were looking at, this is like 0.5 and 1.2% of these points were considered to be something useful. And so the seals are even a small proportion of that. So it's needle in a haystack stuff, and it's really quite labor intensive at the moment. So, quick, ask the audience question. What do you think this image is on the left? Please shout it out. Anybody? It's a seal, yeah. So this is a really nice image of a seal, okay? We don't always get, in fact, from what I've seen, very rarely get an image that nice, but you can make it out. That's probably because it was quite close to the sonar when it came in. Second image, what do you think? Hey, yeah, it's absolutely a shark. Again, another really nice, quite clear image. I've only seen one of those in the data set so far. What do you think the third image is?
Lava.
Lava. Oh, if only.
Shoal fish.
It is a shoal of fish, absolutely. Again, they tend to sort of glimmer as you would expect and move as a sort of amorphous kind of blob. And the last image, what do you think that is? Three seals. It could be. I think when I looked at this one, we actually don't know. We suspect some large fish on the seabed. Maybe a large skate or something like that. But again, one of the things is I'm being a little bit cheeky here because I'm showing you stills. And I think from talking to the people who annotate these things, motion actually helps an awful lot. So these are the good ones. You know, if I just showed you most of them, it would be like a blip. So we've got about a year's worth of data, 62 terabytes of data. Mostly it's raw sonar data. So we've got the annotations as well, but these come in a large number of GLF files. Each one holds about roughly 5 minutes of data. If you were to transfer that on gigabit Ethernet, it's roughly 137 hours. But about 14.5 terabytes of that contains useful tracks. So we've really got to try and cut this down. We've got so much stuff. There's a really big cut that we need to make. So some more figures. This is roughly the number of annotated tracks that we have. It's still going up. Around about 7,000 of those were classified by fish. Bear in mind that we have no cameras underwater. We have no other way of verifying this is ground truth. So this is basically going, we think this is fish with a reasonable probability or not. So again, it's very difficult to be completely certain. About 4,000 roughly as fish schools. And 423 of those were classified by very well-trained humans as seals. So yeah, as I say, no ground truth, varying levels. And the problem with that is seals are considerably outnumbered. Okay? We get maybe, you might be lucky and get probably one a day, I guess. Maybe a little bit more sometimes, but yeah, it's roughly that. So the first thing I thought was, let's try and classify an annotated track. So classification is based on many factors. We've talked that it's a noisy environment, and there are many sort of difficult relationships to pull together. And so computer vision sort of struggles a little bit with that. Classical, if you like. But AI has sort of dealt with similar problems quite well. So the main sort of operation that we're looking at is the convolution operation. So in mathematics, this has a particular term, but the way I sort of view it is you have a kernel, say, 3x3, in this case, a 3x3 pixel grid. And in that sort of 3x3 grid, you've got a set of weights. And you move this kernel across your image, and you multiply the pixels by those weights, add them all together, and that forms your next pixel in the green image at the top. And the artificial intelligence's job is to learn those weights. So hopefully it sort of looks at the image at a big, sort of the whole image, shrinks the image down, looks for different patterns in that, and keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. And each time we're learning new sets of weights. We bring those all together, do a little bit of mathematics, and hopefully we get a decision at the end. This is showing it in much more detail with the numbers. The website there on the left explains this much better than I ever could. It's a very good resource, but essentially this is the same thing. We're learning three separate filters, and we're getting a smaller image on the right-hand side. So left-hand side is our original image. We move our kernel over, running it over, multiplying by those weights there in the first filter, and we get an output volume at the end. So, you now imagine instead of a 2D image with 2D kernels I've just shown, we have a 3D volume with 3D kernels. So the third dimension is, of course, time. So we've got our space, but then we've also got a set of frames, and we stack them into a sort of cube, if you will, and we run our kernel in three dimensions instead of two. So this is a terrible diagram that I sort of sketched out. We've got a set of input frames with a track that's been marked. We then take fixed-size snapshots along that track, combine them into a space-time volume, and we run our 3D convolution over that. We do some more 3D convolutions. We then connect it up with a fully connected neural network layer, and that should give us a set of probabilities. Is this a seal? Is this a fish? Is this something else? So that's the first attempt that we made. And this is what the input data sort of looks like. The top one is a seal, and the second one is a seal. And these are the frames along the track. So starting at the sort of top left, that's where it was first spotted. Then it moved along a bit, and we're sort of moving our window across this track and taking a snapshot. The bottom two are actually unknown and could actually be errors. In fact, I think the bottom one actually was, but we included it anyway to see if we could differentiate between the two. So this is a sort of confusion matrix. It says true positive, you know, it's sort of a way of showing the true positives, true negatives, false positives, what was classified as what. And this is essentially showing that it was absolutely terrible. We've got fish, so FI for fish, FS for fish shoals, seals, and unknown. Because there were so many fish shoals, it absolutely dominates. So what this is saying is that was how many actual seals. How many were actually classified as fish shoals? Well, pretty much all of them. So it couldn't actually differentiate at all. And here's like the output of the training for the neural network. What you'd expect to see is a nice descending graph as the loss gets lower, or a sort of nice curving upward graph as the accuracy gets higher. But what this is showing is everything is absolutely flat, which means it has learned nothing. So at this point in the in the proceedings, I am legally obligated to show this particular comic. For anyone who's not familiar with XKCD, I do recommend it. It's very fun. But essentially, this was the chap who writes it, Randall Monroe, going, yeah, you just keep messing with your neural network until it gives you what you want. So I tried that, and this graph is an absolute mess. The idea is you've got these variables on your neural network that you can sort of turn and pull and like switch until things work, such as the batch size, how many are we looking at in one go, how long are we training for, the number of epochs, and particularly in our case, you've got the learning rate, which is quite important, but also the set length. So that's essentially the window. How many frames are we looking at? How deep is our volume? Is it 4 seconds? Is it 2 seconds? Is it 32 seconds? But there's no pattern there at all. No matter what we did, it didn't work. So stirring the pile didn't help. It's pretty poor performance, and I was very sad. So, but can't give up. So I figured let's try something a little bit different. So I'm going to sort of like sneak up a little bit on the problem, okay? So let's just see if we can spot moving objects instead. Okay, so defining a moving object, things that look and move like the thing we want. Okay, so I'm being a little bit cheesy. It's like, well, I know what a seal looks like moving in this solar data. It's like a blob that moves, a single one that's quite bright. So let's just try and see if we can find those by thinking about movement instead of trying to classify something. So I looked and thought, well, fish are single objects as well. We've got a lot of those. That should be enough to get a training set together that's big enough if we take fish and seals. Let's build a detector. So how do you detect moving objects normally? I say normally, I guess previous sort of methods, if you like. The obvious thing is to remove the static background. It's okay, the background doesn't move, it doesn't change, just subtract that, and what you're left with is what moves. Fairly simple. So this is an example in OpenCV of applying that, and you can see just at the bottom there were these two seals that just went really quickly through. But we're still getting a lot of noise. This is using the Gaussian mixed models background detector. But there's still lots of speckles. You'd have to get rid of those. You'd have to set a number of hand-tuned parameters as well. Another method, this is a really boring slide video because what I've done here is gone, well, each pixel, consider how it changes. That will have a frequency, okay? So you can then, I'll carry on. You can see just at the bottom the same two seals just moving across. What's happening here is we're doing a bandpass filter. We're saying anything, any pixel that moves, changes its value within a certain frequency range, keep that. Seems to perform a little better on the data set, but again, not good enough. So, next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, so AI, lots of people have done some really good AI stuff already. You know, it's a really moving space. This image at the top left is super cool, I think, because they've also taken into account the camera moves. It shakes a bit, but they've pulled out the moving object in question. Bottom left is a very similar network to the one I just described. In the top right, that's using what's known as a generative adversarial network to do something similar. So take an input image and transform it to some other kind of image, roughly, that's what they're doing. And there's a whole list of other attempts. So this seemed like a really rich idea to sort of chase. So here's my silly diagram again. So what I did this time is take the raw sonar images and the track and create a mask. So remember that the track is made up of minimum and maximum bearings and distances. It gives you a little box. And you can plot those boxes and make a nice nice picture of a track. We do those in 3D again. So we stack them up, roughly about 16 frames, so about 4 seconds. And what we use is something called a U-net. This is my first attempt. So it's called a U-net because this central bit is like a U. And so we do the same thing we did before. We convolve these things down and squash it down, squash it down, squash it down, learning all these ways, till we get to the bottom here, which should, this bottom part of the network should contain the important bits of information that we're after. And then what we do is we upsample it. We learn the particular weights to do the convolution almost in reverse. Okay? And so what we end up with is an output image or an output volume the same size as the one that goes in. But hopefully the one that comes out is, there's a 1 for the thing that we want and a 0 for the thing that we don't. Okay? So I knocked up a quick example over Christmas with fake data. So I faked this on the left, and on the right is the correct track. And what was interesting in that is even when it goes behind, when it's occluded, it still picked it up, which I thought was really interesting. So that was like, you know, a couple of hours just messing around. So I thought, maybe that's a good idea, a good thing to pursue. So we convert those bounding boxes from our original track, make a pixel mask. We then smooth over any outliers and make sure that the track is complete. Because I noticed that sometimes the original detector would actually miss bits or put bits in that maybe not there. So I thought, well, okay, we'll just take a sort of nice average of it. So make sure all the gaps in any of those tracks are filled in. And then we break them into a number of frames because you're kind of limited by your GPU, your compute, your memory, effectively. So we break it up into 16 frame lengths. And we try and predict it, say, 16 frames, 4 seconds at a time. So the input image, that's 16 frames from a sonar squashed together. And what that shows is essentially the brightest part is still the turbine in the middle. And on the right is 16 frames of a track squashed together, just so that I can show you. We just basically get an object moving in from the left to the right. So what does that look like? So here's the original sort of input data. Now, I was just sort of saying, can anyone sort of shout out? Can anyone see where the moving object is here? Please shout out if you can. I know it's really difficult, but maybe? Thank you for turning the lights down. No? Yep, bottom right. It's down the bottom right foot, just here. Okay? And it's going to emerge now. Folks see it now a bit easier? Yeah, when it's pointed out, it's not so bad, right? But that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. So, next slide. So this is our attempt at predicting. Can you see it all now? Is that better? Yeah. Hey, excellent. So this was our, it's actually a mixture. The original is in blue. It's a bit hard to see, I know, but original was in blue, our detection was in red, and where they overlap, it goes white. And so we're getting pretty good matching with the original track. And occasionally we actually get bits where the original one failed. So for instance, right here at the end, it's still tracking it where the original didn't, which is really good. So yeah, it seems to work. I was happy. But there's always more. This detector needs to run 24/7. Never sleeps, never takes time off. Even though we're sort of making a good reconstruction of the track, how many are we actually producing? Like, how many false positives are we getting? You know, it's no good just redoing what we've already got. We need to improve on what was there before. So this is a histogram of the original, this is a 24-hour period, how many detections the original detector made. They're in green. The actual number of annotated ones that are useful are in red, which you can just about make out. And the ones that our AI came up with are in blue. So I have to zoom in a little bit. And yeah, you can see that the original detector is massively way far out. It's predicting so much stuff. The AI one's doing better, but it's still getting areas that had nothing in, nothing that was considered useful. Now, of course, it might have picked up something useful. We'd have to go and actually have a look, but it would be nicer if we could at least bring that value a bit closer to what we think is the real one. So we had, this was the original number of points in that previous diagram I showed. We managed to get it down to about 7,000. I think that's it's a pretty good improvement. But in that same period, only 1,800 of those points were seen as good. So let's see if we can improve. One thing you can do is, when I said we had that sort of kernel, what you can do is expand it a little bit. So rather than it having 3 pixels right next to each other, you can spread it out and by taking a little jump, a little gap. That means you can look at a wider area in one go. So we can pick up bigger fields. One other thing you can do is you can make the UNet asymmetric. So rather than having the same number of layers on each side, one of the things that I read was, well, the thing that you're making, this mask, is actually quite simple. It's just 2 colors. You don't need as many parameters when you're going back up. Stands to reason. And for some people, it seems to sort of improve performance. So we improved a little bit, not massively, but a bit. So this is a little video of showing how many detections I got over a 24-hour period. At the bottom is the entire length of time, and at the top is a video showing the detections zoomed in. The green bars are annotations that someone's made, either fish or something else. The red ones are seals. And in this particular stretch of time, this particular day, we didn't miss a single seal, which is good. We did miss a couple of the fish and a few things that were labeled as unknown, but every single seal had a really strong hit. And there's still plenty of gaps where nothing happened. So, you know, it's improving. We're getting there. So, what about unexpected data? Has the network managed to generalize and learn what we want? What adversarial things? Can we trip it up? So, what lurks in the deepest depths beneath the waves? The entity that brings people to the brink of madness and beyond? I have to refer, of course, to Cthulhu. All right? What happens if we put Cthulhu in our sonar image? All right? And the beautiful thing is at this point, it's occluded. Because Cthulhu's quite bright. But then, as soon as it emerges, the AI detector picks it up. So this is proof that basically, although Cthulhu can drive human beings insane, can't really drive AI insane. So there we go. So I'm just going to wrap up. It's a silly example, I know, but it is useful because what we want to do is, it's not just learn the background. It seems to have learned what we want, which is things that are moving. Because we've looked at Cthulhu, but we've also looked at like different backgrounds from different installations, and it does seem to cope quite well. So where do we go now? How can we improve? Good reproduction. Still too many false positives. There might be ways to remove a lot of them. You can do classification with a UNet. I would say this hasn't worked. But there's still lots of other areas that we can investigate. And if anyone's got any ideas, please tell me later. I'm running out of time a little bit, so I'll just say that I also recorded the power that I'm using for all this and plotted it for a number of months. I'm still ongoing. And we're using roughly about 123 kilowatt hours a month. The fact that I got this figure, a typical small flat uses 233, so yeah, I'm using a fair bit. Although the one figure I did find was ChatGPT was 1,300 megawatt hours. So I'd just like to say thank you very much for having me here. Thank you very much for listening. I'd like to thank Jess Gordon and Helena and Emma, who did all the work on the annotation, because that's the really hard bit, making these decisions and getting the data that I can use. I think it's really important to know where your data comes from and who had to do what to do it. As I say, there's a Q&A tent, but also robot arms as well, if anyone wants to ask me anything. Thank you very much for your time.